Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Free kick for Atleti. Good opportunity to give a shout to a blog, a US fan club of Atletico Madrid called Into the Calderon. Do some really good content for all followers of the Colchoneros. A decent base in the United States as well, following the action on ESPN Plus. Give them a follow. Into the Calderon.
Welcome back to Colchonero Chat, a Tuesday afternoon edition. I'm Jeremy, and I'm joined by Villarreal USA's eminent blogger, Alan Dodson, a frequent guest on the show, particularly when Atletico and Villarreal meet, as they did on Sunday. How are you, Alan?
I'm good. How are you, Jeremy?
Fantastic. Looking forward to a bit of rest and recuperation before the next La Liga season begins in, what, 8 weeks?
Oh, yeah, I know. It's crazy. This has been the longest season ever in more ways than one.
No kidding. It's been a really topsy-turvy roller coaster kind of season, but we made it through together. That's what matters. It's
we the did. Journey we did. And the good news, I guess, is that the silly season is shorter.
Yes. So. Yeah, and no one likes silly season, especially with our clubs, because there are just so many rumors floating around our two clubs in particular. Let's start by chatting about Sunday's game, Alan, at La Ceramica. It finished 2-2 between Villarreal and Atletico de Madrid, a season-ending draw for both sides. And when we were talking over the weekend trying to coordinate this episode, you mentioned that it was a result that was not only fair, but kind of highlighted where both teams are strong and where both teams are weak. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I thought for us, under Setien, our play is much more open, and it's much more exciting attacking football, which is great. I feel like he's really given some freedom to players like Nico Jackson, certainly, but also Jeremy has improved this season, the second half of the season, compared to where he was under Emery. I loved watching Adrian Capu being a box-to-box midfielder, which is something that he wasn't given the freedom to do. On the other hand, under Emery, we never conceded from corners ever, and we seldom conceded from free kicks. And Atleti's first goal was a really clever free kick thing, which I guess you guys have worked on in practice because you'd seen how we set up and thought there was something to exploit. And so to me, that kind of showed the good and bad of Villarreal. We've gotten better at attacking, but we're much more open at the back and much more, I would say, just kind of flabby when it comes to defending set ball situations. And for you guys, I think the big thing was it showed watching Atleti play, you know, the intensity, the competitiveness, all that was there. Griezmann, I mean, I'm just, he had a superlative season, and he was the guy that everything went through in the match on Sunday. And you took advantage of, you know, you had good finishing to score the goals. On the other hand, it wasn't the sort of defensive stolidity that I got used to under Cholo either.
Yeah.
And I think that's been the problem this season, is that, you know, you don't have that the great center back pairing that just closed everything down. And not that I mind, it was a really fun game to watch. I would have been very disappointed if we hadn't come away with something, because I think we deserved it.
Yeah.
But it was kind of a different, much more fun game. Saint-Étienne had said going into it that this would be kind of a celebration of the season and the fans would enjoy it. And I think everybody certainly did.
And it ended up being a pretty good season for Villarreal, despite some ups and downs. Unai Emery leaving in the middle of the year to go to Aston Villa, Setien coming in, and life under Setien did not start particularly well. But in the end, Villarreal finished fifth with 19 wins. They will be playing in the Europa League next season and following the Conference League elimination now. And you all won 8 out of your final 13 games in La Liga, yep. Really ending the yep. season strongly. How about young Jorge Pascual getting the equalizer in the 92nd minute?
That was pretty amazing. I mean, he's basically, I guess he played in the friendly. We had a friendly against Galatasaray. I think it was sometime during the World Cup break or something, and he scored then. Or maybe it was during the international break. I don't remember. Anyway, he scored a goal then in the friendly. But I was just impressed with him. I mean, he hasn't played for the B team at all. He was with our C team.
Really?
Yeah, he had played, and he hadn't, you know, he hadn't played that much there either. But he's I think next year he'll start with the B team certainly. But yeah, it was great. I mean, I think the thing watching him when he came on, I was kind of watching him think, okay, what is Saint-Étienne thinking, putting this guy in here? And the thing that impressed me was that he fit right into what we were trying to do. I mean, he was very well coached in terms of our approach and where players were going to be and everything. He made a couple of mistakes. I know he turned the ball over one time where he had a good chance to make a pass, and his pass wasn't. It was kind of that, well, I'm not sure if I want to hit it quite that hard. So it was too soft. You know, young mistakes. But what impressed me was that when he got the ball, he was very calm and composed about scoring that goal. It was just like, okay, yeah, I know where to put this ball, and did it.
He did.
And that was impressive. I was really, really happy, of course, for the draw, but I was really happy for him. And I think it was kind of a, it was almost like another season where, it was kind of a storybook ending in a way. I think the only thing, if that had been the last kick of the match, that would have been perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really the last kick of consequence in that match.
It was the last kick of consequence. Yeah. And, yeah. But yeah, I thought we did as a season. You can't complain about finishing fifth when you lose your coach in midstream.
Yeah.
You hire somebody who has a totally different approach to the game. So, you know, it's going to, even with the World Cup break to get things ironed out, it's going to take time. And the conference elimination was unfortunate, but it also left us free to focus on the league. And so I think if we had the conference to look at, we probably still would have gotten into the Europa League, whether we won it or not, but maybe in sixth behind Betis or something. So,
and yeah, overall, as you said, this was a pretty good season, despite some of the bumps in the road. And Jorge on the spot in the 92nd minute to get the equalizer, mm-hmm. taking advantage of Sal Niguez's kind of back-heeled clearance, ended up right to him. You also have Antonio Gomez, our 20-year-old goalkeeper, making his La Liga debut in relief of Gribich, who had been playing the last stretch of games as Jan Oblak has been dealing with a neck injury. A very weird end to the season for both of our clubs. The result was fair. Atletico were down to 10 for the final 20 minutes. And I know Diego Simeone just licks his lips when he gets to match up against Quique Setien, because from his point of view, he just gets to give Setien the ball. When Setien was at Betis, we had a game in the Villamarín. This was in 2017. Betis literally had 75% possession, and we won 1-0 on a Saul just rolling over the line finish midway through the first half. It was incredible. He loves going up against Setien for this very reason. And we saw this for a lot of the game on Sunday, Alan, was Villarreal getting the ball, higher line, pushing up, Atletico sitting really not even in a medium block. It was a low block. And this, the second goal was three touches, and Correa puts it in the back of the net behind Jorgensen. If Simeone could just play that goal on repeat every time he comes up against a Setien coach team, he's set.
Yeah, and actually even the first goal, you know, which was kind of a classic break from dispossessing someone in midfield. But prior to that, I mean, it felt like you guys had hardly touched the ball.
We did nothing in the first half hour. Nothing
at all. You're just sitting back and letting Villarreal pass the ball around. Overall, you know, yes, we had as I recall, Capu hit a post in the first half.
Yeah, snapped there was it off the crossbar.
There was his slaloming run into the box that ended with him getting a yellow card for simulation. That I swear I saw the same play, Almeria against Espanyol, and Almeria got a penalty.
Of course they did.
It ended up keeping them up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the first half was, it felt like Atleti scored from pretty much the chance they had. And the second half, it was just really fun to watch. I think Simeone, quite apart from Setien, I just think anymore, whenever Villarreal and Atleti get together, maybe it's because of the history of the teams and players moving back and forth, or maybe there's still shades of that last match in 2012 when you guys scored late and sent us down to the Segunda. There's still, I mean, I was thinking about that when Pascual scored, you know. It's like, oh, where was he in 2012? Well, he was about 10. So, you know, there was eight, maybe.
10 years old.
So I think whenever we get together, it's a game that I suspect most of the players on both sides kind of circle it on their calendar with, this is going to be a game. You know, this is going to be a match. It's going to be intense. And generally it's always hard fought. I mean, we don't have 5-0 blowouts or anything like that.
These games are always tough for Atletico. The last four meetings, we haven't won any of them.
Right.
Our last win was at La Ceramica in February of 2021, and Villarreal outplayed us that day.
Yeah, exactly.
And we won 2-0 anyway.
Yeah, and of course we still remember the match where Mondi and Rulli combined to give you guys
combined to contrive the Sowell equalizer from the halfway line.
Yeah, the most surprising equalizer ever.
I was so shocked. I was just laughing for a good 5 minutes after that went in.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I was laughing and crying at the same time.
Exactly.
And the expression on one of the Villarreal coaches' faces kind of was like, oh my God, how could, anyway.
How did
but
this
yeah,
happen?
Things like that happen, and when we play each other, and just make it a really good series. And then, okay, so I have a trivia question for you.
Shoot.
Okay, so Cholo Simeone was named head coach when of Atleti?
December 23rd, 2011.
Right. How many head coaches has Villarreal had since that time?
Oh, I love these questions. I especially love them for like Valencia and Barcelona and Real Madrid. How many have Villarreal had? I'm going to go with 7.
Yeah, it's more like 9.
But
I think I may have counted. I think 9 includes Calleja twice.
There you go.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't think that we're particularly more cyclical than most teams,
sure.
Except that we had the that period did cover the second half of the 2011-12 season when we got relegated and changed coaches in midstream, and then in 2013 we changed coaches in midstream in the Segunda. But yeah, I mean, Simeone, I thought a couple of years ago his enthusiasm was kind of waning, but boy, he's still got it, you know.
He does. Earlier this season, it really felt to me like we were approaching the end, and I don't consider myself like a staunch Simeone defender, but I like the guy. He's the only Atletico coach I've ever known. Right. I'm a big fan. Right. And the day he does eventually leave the club will be a very sad one for everyone involved. But it really felt like, especially the first half of this season, given how rough last season was. But it just...
I think that he enjoys the challenge. And the fact that going into the last match of the season, maybe with a chance to finish second, is not a bad thing.
He always finds something that keeps him going. There's always something that Simeone picks out. He'll mention it in a press conference, like very subtly, very gently, and then he'll just riff on it. It becomes a theme for the second half of the season. This year, yeah. It was responding after the World Cup, which turned into finishing second, you know, cleaning out the dressing room, going as far as we can in La Liga, and ultimately finishing just a point behind Real Madrid. You mentioned the year that we scored and got you all sent down. Pascual's goal cost Atletico $7 million because Madrid got to be second and got extra cash.
There were definitely people that noted that.
Uh-huh. I was one of them.
It's like, well, we can't send them down, but we can at least put a hole in their checkbook. Yeah,
which you did.
So in their pocket. So yeah, it was I think kind of a sweet revenge in that sense. Yeah. And I think, as you know, Villarreal have often finished off the season pretty well. You know, we remember the last year that Calleja was coaching us, and we had actually already had a deal with Emery, but we ripped off something like 6 or 7 wins at the end in a row. And I think under Setien, it took some time to adjust. I think overall, more players now are understanding what they need to do. Now we're going to have an interesting summer because we do have some overloads at some positions, but we also expect we're going to have teams coming in for some of our players too.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens with who actually is on the squad when the season starts again.
And I'm very interested in getting your thoughts on that, because Atletico it won't be quite a dramatic summer for Atletico. At least the club isn't indicating that it's going to be, but there will be movement. And I do want to get your thoughts on where both clubs are going to end up this summer. You mentioned Mondi a couple of minutes ago. Do you think that was a penalty in the first half when he goes to ground and Griezmann clatters a shot off his arm?
Was it in the first half? Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was around 35 minutes, I think.
Yeah, no, I don't. But having said that, I don't think we could talk about Spanish refereeing all day long.
Oh,
I don't think anybody knows what a handball is anymore.
Yeah.
I say no, not just because of the shirt that the guy was wearing. I'll try to take that out of the equation. But when I learned about the rules, the idea was that if you were sliding like that, and basically it was a ball to arm kind of thing, you know, and you're allowed to put your arm out to brace yourself and whatever. He's not even looking at the shot. He's basically sliding. Having said that, I've seen penalties given in La Liga for things that looked exactly like that.
Exactly.
And looked a lot weirder than that. I mean, Pau Torres had a penalty called on him a couple of years ago against Athletic Club where he had turned his back on the shot, the shot hit him in the elbow and the referee called a penalty. And I was like, well, never mind scoring. Just aim for the guy's elbow all the time.
What's he supposed to do?
I don't think it was a penalty. No, but, I think there's just a real lack of clarity anymore in terms of what happens. And it almost seems the referee on Sunday in our match was not very interested in referring things to VAR.
No.
And that was a big contrast to, as I mentioned earlier, the Almeria Espanyol match, where that penalty, which keeps Almeria up and sends Valladolid down. I mean, the original call by the ref was the same. Giving the attacker a yellow for a simulation, for a dive. And then VAR reviews it and calls it a penalty. And to me, it looked exactly the same as what Capu, can't remember who the defender was, but in the first half of our match. And it's like, why is one way and one the other? Well, seem probably if VAR gets involved, it doesn't seem to be working very well in Spain.
Yeah, therein lies the entire problem.
Yeah, and so I mean, we can't, you know, not to pick on one or two decisions on one in 1 week, but this has been a recurring theme of the La Liga season, is that nobody knows what handball is anymore. Nobody knows what. I mean, Spain compared to England has always given softer penalties, you know.
Yeah.
But now with VAR, it seems like the variation in what's given is wider, and some of the penalties that are allowed are just not. It's almost like the referee doesn't feel like his decision is that important anymore. For a lot of the referees on the pitch, it's like as soon as there's a decision, oh, I'll refer it to VAR, and then it's out of their hands. They can't be blamed for it.
Exactly. And that is the entire problem, really, in a nutshell, Alan. Earlier this season, when we played at Real Sociedad, Umar Sadiq scored it with his shoulder, right? That equalizer ended up, you know, being the game's last goal, and it finished 1-1. And just the criteria is so unclear, and it changes wildly from week to week, depending really on who the referee is. Like, I don't think it's a conspiracy against any one team or half a dozen teams. I just think the referees are that bad. And I just think that because there is no communication between La Liga and the Federation, because Tebas and Rubiales hate each other, it's not going to get better.
Yeah, I think that's a fundamental problem, really.
Yeah, no one talks about it.
No one is actually, because you don't have the good communication between the RFEF, who are in charge of the referees, and La Liga, nothing is going to change. That's the part that bothers me. The other thing that this is probably a good place to segue into the referee who retired after 15 years. Mm. Say what you know, you can love him or hate him, but Lajos was his own guy out there. And I almost feel like, you know, we're going to miss, well, he couldn't referee Villarreal because he was a Valencian community referee, right? But, you know, you're going to miss the fact that he was a larger than life figure in the way that some of the referees in the Premier League are. And I think I think maybe that's a lot of the difference, is that when you look at something like the EPL, the referee considers himself as an important part of the game. And I don't feel like in Spain, that's always the case. I feel like sometimes the referees are overcome by the players.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, I just don't think from the beginning an EPL referee takes charge of the match. And I feel like a lot of times the referees in Spain don't really take charge until it's too late.
They gotta play catch up.
Yeah. Whatever you say about Lajos, he was in charge.
Yeah.
You know that.
He was a character.
Yeah, he was a character. And, you know, he would drive you crazy. And as I say, I guess I can have a different perspective on him than some, because he never refereed or refereed a match where my team was playing. But, you know, he had a personality. You knew that at some point the match was going to involve him, but generally, it involved him for good reasons, that he was trying to really take charge of the match and make things happen. The funniest Lajos story, though, is, you know how many yellow cards he gave out in his last match in La Liga?
Nil. He gave out zero.
Yeah.
Naturally.
I guess he was trying to make up for the World Cup.
Yeah, which he received, like, just serious, like, universal criticism.
For his referee during the World Cup.
He was always a really good communicator too. Lajos, players would often say Lajos was a really good.
I think that's the thing that I do see sometimes the Spanish referees trying to communicate with the players, but it's usually it's usually the players who are instigating the communication. And I think Lajos was different because he would, you know, engage a player in conversation and say, okay, don't do this, or this is why I made this call. Let's move on, you know? And I think that kind of thing is great. But as we said, so he's retired. I can't remember there was another referee who retired also, I believe. I think there were two. And so we'll have two coming up from the Segunda. And, you know, I just don't see a lot of improvement. I'm sad to say, but I think the current system, the way it works, sort of assumes that the RFEF president and La Liga president get along, and they don't.
And they don't. And Tebas also won't pay for goal line technology, which every other major league has, except La Liga, because Tebas won't fork over €3 million for it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, kind of sums up where La Liga is as a league, you know, still one of the major leagues.
Yeah, but. I mean, I think we both have to say that one of the things that is a concern is that La Liga is beginning to slip in the world rankings, yep, and is beginning to slip in terms of attractiveness for players. You know, I think Barcelona and Real Madrid can still be places where stars want to go, but if you have somebody considering going to Atleti, Real Sociedad, or Villarreal, and then they have a choice of moving to pretty much any of the top five or six or seven teams in England, where do you think they're going to end up?
They're going to go to England.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, that's something that is, I think we're starting to see that percolate through sort of on a year-on-year effect. But, you know, this year we had a Champions League where, apart from Real Madrid, we didn't, you know, the Spanish team wasn't in the semifinal.
Yep, because Barcelona were knocked out in the group stage and ended up, you know, losing the Europa League playoff. Atletico were in a very humiliating fashion, with me in attendance, knocked out of the group stage of the Champions League. And then, you know, Betis had a decent run in the Europa League, but what, they lasted till the last 16 when United knocked them out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Villarreal, it's only Sevilla, you know.
And then Sevilla rescuing everybody, apparently, again. I don't know how they keep doing it. Just give them the trophy.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, I do worry a bit that it used to be when you got a good player developed. I mean, Spain has always, through the Canteras, has, you know, Spanish league teams have always developed good players. And it used to be that you could count on holding on to those players for a while. And now, you know, the money is, and the interest in playing abroad is much more than it was, I guess. But yeah, it, you look at it and you think, where is the league going to be? Where is La Liga going to be in 10 years?
It's a little scary to think about, because the La Liga is falling behind, but they do have a swanky new logo coming next season. Did you see this?
Yeah, I'm sad.
It looks like a number 4.
yeah, I know. It's like, it's another one of those rebrands where you're like, how much did you pay for that?
How much in consulting fees are you doling out, Javier?
Yeah, well, yeah, you can't pay for goal line technology, but you can pay for that.
We sure can't pay for a rebound away from La Liga's classic imagery.
Yeah, which was really good, and although we often made fun of it, the "it's not football, it's La Liga" line was pretty good. I'm sorry to lose that.
It was a great marketing campaign, despite the obvious meme potential.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So yeah, It is a little daunting. I think you know, the Italian league has been good. I just wonder if Spain is going to end up in, is La Liga going to become a basically like the French league, where we end up supplying players to other leagues higher up the chain? I don't know. I hope not.
Yeah.
But realistically, in terms of competitiveness, I do wonder if that's going to be the way we end up over time. I hope not, but and as a Villarreal fan, I mean, you sort of see it, I guess, from a little different perspective than Atleti with a higher budget and more ability to attract players, but it's not that much different. And Barcelona has their own issues. Mm-hmm. I don't think they'll get kicked out of Europe. If they did, I guess Villarreal would benefit, but I don't think they will. I think they'll find some creative accounting, but they're, if you look at the Barcelona squad now compared to where it was 5 or 6 years ago, you know, there's not a comparison.
No, there's not.
Yeah. I mean, Real Madrid is probably the exception, and that's, you know, they have a ton of money. They're well managed. And having just been in Madrid and seeing all the construction cranes working, I mean, Florentino Perez is in the right business.
Yeah, that is his industry. How's the Puerta del Sol looking? Because when I was there in October, there was nothing there.
Sorry?
How's the Puerta del Sol looking? Because it was just all construction.
Oh, there's still nothing there. It's still got all this scaffolding stuff around it.
Yeah. Same with the Puerta de Alcalá, I assume?
Yeah. Wonderful. I think so.
That's no, I didn't miss much.
Yeah, and I was actually near the Bernabeu, and there's, you know, they've got all sorts of stuff working on there too. And I guess they're redoing all some, you know, that upper tier or whatever it is. So yeah, it's kind of, there's a lot of construction going on. I'm not sure where all the money is coming from, but presumably the construction people are getting paid pretty well. Yeah. It's just odd because around the ground there are all these moribund shopping centers that were, the pandemic basically killed them off. And so you have this bizarre, on the one hand, you've got new buildings going up. On the other hand, you have old buildings that are sitting two thirds empty.
It's a very weird juxtaposition, a very weird dichotomy.
But
you know, Madrid single-handedly might be able to reverse this talent drain from La Liga, given all the salary they're saving with Benzema leaving, with Mariano leaving, with Eden Hazard leaving, Jude Bellingham likely coming in. Madrid are going to likely take it up, knowing them, are likely going to take it upon themselves to kind of, you know, turn off the faucet of all these players leaving La Liga at a younger and younger age and going to, you know, mid-table Premier League sides because the wages are so much better. And the competition, although maybe not better, the attractiveness of the Premier League and playing in England right now is much higher than it is playing in Spain or even Italy. Serie A has been a very good league the past few years.
Yeah.
Playing in Germany.
Well, you know, you could end up again where you have, the thing about Madrid and is that you never have any shortage of players who want to join Madrid, right? Yeah. I mean, if you're a decent player and you get an offer from Madrid, I've never heard of somebody saying, you know, I don't really think I'd be a good fit there. Well, I take it back. Santi Cazorla said that.
Yeah, he did.
many years ago. But that's the exception. It's like most players are gonna say, yeah, great, I'll sign on the dotted line and everything, and then maybe they end up getting loaned out to Getafe or something.
But they're contracted to Real Madrid. They get to live in Madrid. They get good money.
Yeah, and then they end up playing very little for Madrid, if at all. Anyway, I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens because I think Madrid are, with Benzema leaving, yes, they'll save a bunch of money there. On salary, you know, the others you mentioned, they're we'll see what they end up doing. The latest story was that they're maybe coming after Samu Chukwueze, yeah. And I don't know that that would be a terrible thing for Samu, and I would hope that Villarreal would try to stick to his release clause in the case of Real Madrid. But you know, I mean, Samu has been a great player for us. I think he's really been revitalized over the last year and a half. But I also feel like he's a player who has probably is looking for a new challenge. He's probably done as much as he can at Villarreal. And I think he's been, he's still young, but he's been a part of our team for like 5 years. And I think probably in his mind, that's why he hasn't renewed a contract and will be out of contract in 24, is I think he's got to be looking for this as my chance for the next big step up. Now, whether that's Madrid or whether it's a club in England, I don't know. But I'm pretty much resigned to losing him this summer.
What about Nico Jackson, who had a tremendous second half of the season under Setien, scored on Sunday, another goal, finished with 12 for the year?
Yeah. Well, I think with – and, of course, we had agreed to sell him and thought we had sold him in January to Bournemouth, and then he failed the physical.
Oh, right? That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And so every time every goal he scored, I'm like, okay, let's add $5 million to that. I think it really depends on what the offers are, because I'm not sure what his release clause is. I think Samu is 70, 80 million.
I think Samu's is 80.
80. And Jackson's, I'm guessing, it was 30, I think. I could be wrong. I think probably if we get a good offer for him, to me, he's a player who's kind of, who has sort of blown up in the last 6 months, well, last 3 months, really. And so that's the kind of player that you cash in on. You put something in the contract that if he becomes, you know, if you sell him on for more money, we get some of it. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think it really depends on what offers come in for him, because I think we already were willing to accept good money for him in December, and I think we probably still would be now.
Pau Torres' contract is up next year too, if I'm not mistaken. Any rumblings mm-hmm. around him?
Yeah. A lot of talk that maybe Emery will want him for Aston Villa mm-hmm. because obviously they won the Europa League together. And I think Pau was really good under Emery. I don't get the sense under Setien, because we're more open. I don't get that. I don't know that he is as comfortable as I think under Emery. He was really a key cog in our defending set pieces and things like that. And I could see him again. He's a bit like Samu, where he's young, but how many more times are you going to get to move abroad? After you've already won the first major trophy. I know we won the Intertoto Cup or something, you know, years ago. But the first major trophy in the club's history, playing Europa League, he's done that before. On the other hand, he's a local boy. Yeah. So does he really want to move? I think it really depends. I kind of think if Aston Villa come in with a offer that's good, we would leave it to Powell to decide, and probably he would say yes to join Emery again. But I think if it's some other team coming in, I'm not so sure he would say yes.
That seems fair. And Powell is Villarreal born and bred, and that's always kind of traumatic when a player like that grows up with the club, wins the Europa League with the club, and then eventually leaves the club. That's always really sad.
Yeah, wins the Europa League with the club, and then the open bus open top bus parade goes right by where he grew up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you can't imagine.
Get scripted better.
Yeah. I just think if the thing is, though, it's like unless he's going to sign a new contract for another 3 or 4 years out, we certainly don't want to take a chance of losing him for nothing. And so I think in his case, the club is going to leave it to him with whatever. They're probably going to set a minimum for, I forget what his release clause is, but say, you know, something in the 40 to 50 million range,
that
I think,
right.
Maybe 50.
Yeah.
So probably given the fact that on our books, he has zero expense, zero value because he came up through our Cantera, I suspect we would probably give him the option if we got an offer that we deemed sufficient, which would probably be 40, 50 million. But it's totally up to him. But if he says no, then we're going to say, all right, you need to sign a new contract.
Exactly.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
And other than that, I mean, I think Yeremy, we have there are continued rumors about, and he's in the Spanish national team now, so that might increase his visibility. I don't think Alex Baena is, I think he's impressed this season. He's been very good. I don't think he's yet on the radar of teams to move.
I don't think he's quite ready. I'd agree with that.
Yeah. And then we've just got players that are kind of, we've got a bunch of midfielders and we're going to have to figure out how to move some of them. Coquelin, who's great when he can play, but he seldom can, would be one candidate, I think. I think we'll just see what offers come in. Boulay Dia, who we loaned to Salernitana in Italy with a buy option. The deal there is they're going to exercise the buy option, and then they're going to sell him on right away. And I guess we have a sell-on clause as part of the buy option.
Nice.
So we'll end up getting, you know, a minor profit on the deal. So, but that'll be 15 million, 16 million or something like that coming in.
Yeah, potentially so that's quite a bit of money coming back to La Ceramica this summer if two or three other players go.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. We'll have a bunch of players go. If we do, we'll have a bunch of money coming in. I'll be curious to see where we need a goalkeeper, first string goalkeeper, no question. Depending on whether Powell leaves, I would say we need one or two center backs. I was thinking we might get Nacho, but I guess he's re-upped at Madrid.
They're going to name him captain.
Yeah, so because if you think about it, where we tend to like to go for defenders is like Marchena, like Albiol. You know, we like to go for guys who have La Liga experience, who are in their 30s and are kind of the wily old veterans.
They're cheap, above all.
They're cheap. And they tend to be good. Albiol, of course, has, you know, been outstanding.
Very
Although
signing.
I think this next year will be his last year because he's breaking down physically mm-hmm. too much. But you know, he's somebody who could move right into coaching.
From the Atletico point of view, there's also going to be some movement this summer, but a lot of it depends on what is going to happen with Joao Felix, who's coming back from Chelsea.
Yeah.
It's already been confirmed. He doesn't want to stay. Diego Simeone doesn't really want him back, although on Spanish radio last week he said, sure, he's welcome back. I don't have any issue with him. We all kind of know he does, and we know that if Joao comes back, we're going to have the same issues we had last season, earlier this season, where he's just, you know, he's not a player who plays for the team. And under Cholo Simeone, if you do not sacrifice for the collective, you will not play. And that is what mm-hmm. happened to Joao Felix. That's what happened to Mateus Cunha, on whom we made a tremendous profit, a striker who can't score goals, scored only two of them in the Premier League for Wolves, and we got 40 million back for him.
That was pretty good. 20 million. Yeah, that reminds me. We have our own Felix in Danjuma, who I keep forgetting about.
Yes.
It's like, you know, it's like he's another one where you know, Satian has said, oh, sure, you know, I mean, well, yeah, okay. I'm not necessarily going to make him leave. I mean, he's welcome back, but we all know he's going to go somewhere.
Is he welcome back, though? I don't think he is.
Well, no, I don't. I mean, I don't think that – I think that unfortunately, the bridges are burned there.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is – the same thing. It's like if you're not willing to work for the collective, and if you're basically a very selfish player on the pitch, that's not going to go over well.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very similar situation to what happened to Joao. And both players go to the Premier League on loan, and they struggled.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Danjuma struggled to get. It's never great when you go to a club on loan and the first thing that happens is they fire the manager that brought you.
That's not good.
One red flag. I think it's going to be. I guess it almost seems. I mean, Felix, you guys have a lot more money sunk in him than we do in Danjuma, but it's like every year the contract gets amortized. You're looking at him on the books and you're thinking, okay, what can we sell this guy for? Danjuma is still somebody who, if they stump up 20 million, we'd sell him, no question.
Oh, sure. Yeah, with Joao, it's very different.
Joao's problem is he's too expensive. So if his surliness and selfishness is too expensive.
We still owe Benfica over 50 million euro for him because he signed a 7-year contract and the transfer fee, the much ballyhoo transfer fee, was amortized over the length of the contract. So we still owe close to 60 million for him.
Well, maybe Benfica would take him back.
That's what I've been thinking, honestly.
I mean, stranger things have happened, you know?
Yeah, that's honestly what I've been thinking about is that we would be paying Benfica still for his original transfer while they recover the player. Like, there are no downsides, especially for Benfica.
It
doesn't seem like the top teams in England want him anymore, given his showcase at Chelsea went terribly. Granted, it wasn't all his fault. Chelsea are severely dysfunctional. That's not all on him. But the showcase still didn't go well. He scored 4 goals, no assists.
And he's such a talented player. You know what he can do, or at least what he did to at Benfica. So, you know, I would think that might be the perfect situation, since Benfica basically is owed a bunch of money anyway, is to kind of work out a deal with them. I could see something like that happening. Yeah. It's kind of like when we got Gerard Moreno from Espanyol. We had sold them 50% of his rights, but we kept the other 50%. So that gave us a little bit of an ability to work out a deal. And when you're owed Benfica, when you're at over the life of the contract, it's almost the same thing. It's like you still basically owe part of the player until you pay that money. Mm-hmm. Legally, you don't, but in your mind, you do. So, yeah, maybe there's something like that would work. And Carrasco is leaving, right?
It looks like he is. Simeone was on Catanacope last week and said Carrasco has a great opportunity to go to Barcelona. It's a wonderful chance for him, which Cholo very rarely says that about players. He usually shuts down transfer talk immediately. So Simeone saying that is significant. And Carrasco, I assume he's going to leave. He has a contract through next year that has not been renewed. And I think he's going to go because this is a very decisive summer for him. If he stays, you've got to renew his contract until his age 33 season.
Same as with Powell,
As good as Carrasco is/can be, he's not always that good. The first half of the season, he was dreadful. He really bounced back after the World Cup and was, especially after Reinildo's season-ending injury, he returned to left wing back and played really well for the final couple of months of the season. Barcelona have a buy option on him, like a right of first refusal, basically, that they negotiated as part of the Memphis deal in January. Mm. And Memphis comes in, he plays one game in the final 2 months. So, if Memphis is healthy, he will be a valuable contributor, but we need to get him healthy first.
With
Carrasco, that option of first refusal is around 20 million euro. Barcelona media has been saying for months that they don't want to pay that they want to negotiate it down, maybe include a player. So another Miguel Angel Gil negotiation masterclass is about to take place. He's going to find a way to get some other player from Barcelona as part of the negotiation for Carrasco. But I think it's the right move to sell Carrasco because he's about to turn 30, and he started to slow down over the past couple of seasons. He's always been a kind of a polarizing, inconsistent player. It's been difficult to motivate him at times. When he's on, there aren't many left-sided players in Spain who are better than him. But I also don't want to renew him till he's 32 or 33.
Yeah, that's one thing that I think, you know, Villarreal have been much more willing to keep players longer. We have players under contract who are, you know, will be 34 or 35 when the contract ends. It's an interesting one. I mean, we also have Gio Lo Celso, who was on loan from Spurs.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were word was that they were going to try to work some deal where they could get Samu in return for cash and Lo Celso or something. And it's just like, you know, I just don't see that. I just don't see that as a viable option. I mean, we don't. Lo Celso's value to us is not that great, I don't think. He's a decent he was decent for us, but he had some injuries that I think affected him. And it's like I look at him now, it's like, okay, we have a whatever our buy option is, 20 million, we're not gonna do that. If Spurs would say, oh, we'll offer him to you for 10, we'd probably take him. But Daniel Levy doesn't do that.
No.
So, you know, I think he's probably going to go back to Spurs and will end up getting sold somewhere for more money than we're willing to pay.
Injuries have really kind of ruined his career. That year he had at Betis, he was so good.
Oh, he was great, you know, and he had flashes of that with Villarreal too. But injuries have just affected him. And I also don't know that I feel like with the change in coach, that probably didn't help him that much, because I think his game is more suited to a tighter style of football than what Setién wants to play.
Mm-hmm. Something a lot more pragmatic, like Emery espouses.
Yeah, I feel like that. I feel like Emery was really a coach who really liked the players who could work in really close spaces.
Yeah.
And Setién is more about creating bigger spaces.
Really expanding the pitch, and that doesn't suit that many players all that well.
Yeah, it suits players like Samu, Jackson.
Yep.
Baena, Jeremy, it suits young players with speed. It doesn't suit somebody who's really got tight ball control and is not that fast, but is kind of quick.
Yep, really agile.
Yeah, really agile. So I don't see him staying. But you know, I think a lot is just going to depend on who gets the big offer for us that we decide it's an offer we can't turn down.
I think Atletico are kind of approaching the summer the same way, and a lot of it's contingent on what's going to happen with Joao. We expect Carrasco is going to leave. The club's going to look for reinforcements at left back and right back. Javi Galán is kind of well placed at the moment to be the signing at left back. That would be a really good pickup. I'm a big fan of Galán. I think he's been one of the best left backs in the division for about 3 years now. We could have had him when Huesca went down. He was available for about 4 million euro, and we just didn't buy him. I don't know why. That would have been a smart club would have bought him when Huesca went down, but it looks like he's still available for less than 20 million. He wants to leave Celta, so I think that would be a really nice deal. We've also been linked with Kangin Lee from Mallorca, which would be very exciting.
Yeah, who's had a really good he's had a good season there, I understand. I think for us, well, we've got some players that we probably need to find exits for. Mojica hasn't worked out. I mean, this is not big money, but it's just like, you know, move a guy on, save some salary, get a couple of million. Same for Femenia at right back. I don't think that's been a couple of those pickups that were cheap. You know, so you do a bunch. Villarreal tends to do a bunch of those, and some of them will end up being like an Etienne Capoue, right? Mm-hmm. or an Albiol, where it's like, okay, we spent minimal money and we got this star in our team. But then you have the ones where it's like, okay, yeah, that wasn't great. But usually, if you don't have that much money into the player, you can move them on for not that much. But you mentioned Galan and Celta. I mean, Celta are a team that I really worry about because they're going to be the same way. They're going to have money from selling Galan probably and Vega.
Yep.
But you know, Iago Aspas is getting to that age where he's pretty much trying to lead the team from the bench more often than he used to. I worry about them for next year.
I was worried about them this season. They very, very nearly got relegated this time around. If it wasn't for Barca being on holiday, they probably would have been relegated. Gabri Vega saved them, and he's now going to deliver 30 million euro into their accounts, which is great. But I worry about the alignment of vision there between the club president and whoever the coach is going to be next year. Yeah, they're probably going to change coaches again. And Iago Aspas can't keep doing this forever. He did show signs that he was slowing down this year. They, I think, probably have to be an early favorite to go down next year.
Yeah, which I'm sorry because I really like their respect their history in Europe and all of that stuff.
Very unique club.
And they're out there in the middle of far western Spain. You know, I always like the teams that are sort of out there on their own, and I think and manage to be successful. But yeah, they're going to have a tough time. I kind of worry they're going to be this year's Espanyol, where everybody said, oh, they were too good to go down. Well, no, they weren't.
No, they weren't. And before they realized it was already too late.
Yeah, yeah. But I Kangin Lee from Mallorca would be a good signing too, I think.
I think it would only happen if Thomas Lemar or Saúl Ñíguez left the club, which is possible. I think one of them, at least one of them, is going to leave this summer. Lemar, he's a strange player. Very talented. Simeone often speaks glowingly of him as the link between midfield and attack. But the last three seasons, he has been injured at the end of the year, every year.
His
physical level is very low. I don't think he completed 90 minutes in any game this year. The physical level is low. He's not a very consistent player despite his talent. Atletico simultaneously need a player like him, but they will not miss him if he is sold. And I think the club would like to sell him. That was 70 million euro for 70% of his rights to Monaco. Great deal for Monaco, not so much for Atleti. Saúl is someone that we've been trying to move on for 3 years now. Haven't been able to do it. Really hoped Chelsea would buy him last summer. They didn't. He comes back. Yeah. He has a really weird season. Simeone doesn't quite know what to do with him. He gets a run of starts at the end of the year, perhaps to put him in the shop window. His wages are going to be a big problem for anyone, at least in Spain, who wants to sign him. Rayo were interested in him in the winter window, but his wages were just too high. Sevilla and Valencia checked in on him, but again, the wages. And he's got 3 more years on that contract. It was a 9-year contract we signed him to. At the time, it seemed like a great idea, but now it's very much not.
How much is he getting a year?
I want to say it's 6 to 8 million a year. He's one of our highest earners.
Yeah, okay.
And
yeah,
at the time, he was on his way to becoming one of the top midfielders in Europe, and he just
stagnated. But you're right. That makes it really difficult. I mean, a club like – I mean, Valencia used to put players on silly wages, but they can't really do it anymore. And Sevilla are tightening the belts too, so – It's tough. I mean, I think that's the one advantage of when you have players that you're trying to move who are on moderate wages and moderate transfer fee requests, you can generally move them. But the higher up the chain you get, the fewer clubs there are that you can that will be interested in somebody like that. Yeah, I mean, unless you basically want to work out some kind of creative deal where they pay 50% of his rights and you're still paying 50% of his wages or something, you know, you can be pretty creative, but bottom line is you've got a bunch of sunk cost in this guy that you're not going to get back.
That is likely the only way Atletico will be able to move Saul on this summer is by loaning him again and a commitment of 50 to 75% of his wages, which is a little relief, but not as much as the club ideally would want.
Yeah.
And I think we also have to bring in another central defender, because if I have to watch Axel Witsel play that role again next season, I'm going to rip out all my hair.
Yeah, well, you know, I was going to say, I think it would be appropriate if his last act for Atleti was to get the red card.
Yeah, I mean, center back is not his normal position. I get that. He's a pivot by trade. We kind of shoehorned him into this role as a central defender, but physically, he's done. He can't run anymore. Yeah. He can't keep up, and it negates any positives from his passing ability or his, you know, intelligence as a player. He physically is unable to keep up at the top level.
Right. Well, I was going to say the one Villarreal player, well, not the one, but one Villarreal player we haven't talked about at all is Gerard Moreno.
Oh, yeah.
And I think this is another case where you look at a guy who is incredible. I mean, when he's healthy, he is one of the best strikers in La Liga, one of the best in Europe. But, boy, you know, we were hoping that last year was an aberration, but this year was just more of the same. He just gets these nagging hamstring injuries, nagging injuries that he's – the fact that we finished fifth with our best striker on the bench for most of the season is pretty good tribute, I think. But
yeah.
And when he was able to play, he was great. But now we're sort of in the situation where we have him and we're basically going to be – sitting here hoping for as many minutes as we can get, but he's not a player that anybody's going to come in for, or he's not somebody we can count on in the way that we hoped we could 2 years ago.
That is possibly going to become another Saul Niguez situation. I hope Gerard is healthy again someday, but he's only made 28 starts the past 2 years in La Liga. He's 31 now. He's got a contract till 2027, which again was a great idea at the time.
Great idea at the time, but and he's not. I'm not sure what his salary is, but it's not as he's one of our higher earners, but he's not on. He wouldn't be one of your higher earners.
Right.
It is going to be a contract where as you look at the last couple of years of it, you're like, okay, you know. Because chances are he's going to be able to play in maybe if you're lucky, 2/3 of the games. I mean, I'd love to think he could come back and be the player he was 3 years ago, but I don't know how I could realistically expect that.
It's a little tough to see, yeah, sadly.
It's great to sign players to long-term contracts, but you always have the issue of injuries in Gerard's case that have really, really taken a toll. And so he's not even in the Spain squad for that just got announced. And in some ways, I'm kind of relieved because I think that just would be another opportunity for him to get injured.
Yeah, just let him get healthy. De La Fuente hasn't been calling up.
Let him rest, yeah.
He hasn't been calling up any Atletico players either. Morata is the only one in the Spain squad. Coque isn't there. Llorente's not there. Mario Hermoso isn't there despite his brilliant second half of the season, which I'm kind of relieved about. Like, yes, I'd like to see our players play for the national team. And Coque in particular was an essential player under Luis Enrique, but you know, great. They get to rest over the summer. It's been a long season.
Yeah,
it's been
yeah,
a strange season.
Yeah.
Let him rest.
Yeah. It's like we have Jeremy called up. It's like, great. You know, go for it. You're a young guy. You have the stamina. You know, I'm just as happy that Pau isn't in there. I'm really happy Gerard isn't. Let them rest, especially since it's such a short time until the season gets going again.
Yeah, absolutely. They need all the rest and recuperation they can get. And finally, for Atletico, I would like to see them add another striker because I don't think they're going to get anywhere with Morata leading the line. He's just average. He's just kind of there. I think Morata had a very fitting end to the season too, Alan. As Pau Torres goes up for the ball in the air,
Morata clamors for a foul.
Morata goes down, stays on the ground for about 2 minutes, and Villarreal put the equalizer in by that time. By the time he gets up. And like, I was going to say
that was kind of classic. I watched that on replay, and I'm like, "Oh, come on, Morata!" You know, it's like that.
Like, Pau is climbing to get the ball, but the contact there wasn't extensive. It wasn't extreme.
No, and then it wasn't. And Morata is just, to me, he's always been kind of a donkey of a player, and I guess that was sort of a classic.
He's great for Spain, but he's gotten this far largely on his reputation as Madrid-born, Madrid Academy, future star, huge transfer fees, and he's just never been that player.
I know. It's funny. It's like you look at some of these players that just you look at their transfer record and you're like, well, how come these transfer fees were like five times what they were for this guy who ended up having a much more successful career? Sometimes you just can't figure it out. You know, it's the herd mentality, I suppose.
It really is. But you're
like, it's like, well, and of course, you know, we had a perfect example ourselves in Paco Alcácer. You know, it's like another guy who has always commanded big fees, and it's like, you're always hoping you can be the one that makes him the star of it. Surely he's going to be. No.
Is he still? Where is Paco now? Is he still in Saudi Arabia?
He's in the Middle East in Sharjah. I think it is. That was a weird thing. It was like we had agreed to loan him there, and then it ended up we just tore up his contract and said, "Fine, we're done."
That was so funny. Literally 24 hours after you sent him there, it's like, "Yeah, we'll just take him permanently. Bye."
Bye. Yeah. I know that was weird, and that was a huge loss on our books.
Big disappointment because that was a big swing you took on him getting him from Dortmund, and he would have been really good.
Well, if you look at it, our biggest signings in terms of money, which of course are nothing compared to you guys or Madrid or Barca, but I think our record signings are like Paco, and then Danjuma is up there.
we tend
to do real well on the signings of about 10 million and under, but boy, you get us into modern football where we signed Toko Ekambi, and that seemed like that was going to work for a while, and then it didn't. We signed Dia for 12, 13 million and immediately sent him out on loan. You know, it doesn't seem like we have a great track record. Unal is another one where we paid, not sure what our fee was, what we actually paid. I want to say 10, 12 million. And that was, again, one of these hopeful deals that we didn't stick around and develop him long enough to get the rewards from it. You know, we eventually ended up selling him to Getafe. And I guess we do have a sell-on clause there. So if he has a good season next year, maybe we can make some money back. But, you know, you look at the players who have become legends at our club, and they're mostly the players who have been homegrown or picked up for fairly cheap.
Atletico's list of record signings does not make for easy reading either. João Félix, 127 million euros. You can't argue that he was a success. Tomo Lemar, 72 million euro. He hasn't really been a success. Diego Costa for over 60 million euro. That was not a success. Falcao was great, but he was only here for 2 years. Vitolo was a disaster.
Yeah. Oh, we should probably, did you see the thing about Luciano Vietto maybe coming back to Villarreal? I just thought that was the weirdest rumor.
I saw like one solitary tweet about it, but I don't think I paid it much mind. Do you think it's going to happen?
No, I don't. No, because I mean, it was a rumor from Mundo Deportivo, who don't tend to really cover Villarreal that well anyway. I almost thought it was like a joke. It's like this, okay, well, since you guys are busy signing players for free, like Brereton Diaz and Denis Suarez, so let's, you know, Vieto is available. Doesn't seem like a good fit to me, but it also doesn't seem like we would be doing anything until somebody leaves, frankly.
What a strange career Vieto has had. I was so excited when we signed him from Villarreal, and it just never happened, never panned out for him.
No, well, he had the season with us under Marcelino. He was like his breakout season, yep. And we, you know, Cholo wanted him, signed him for 20 million, was it?
Yep.
Like that. I think it was always a bit of a risk with him, because if you remember, Liverpool were going to sign him a couple of years before we did, because he had a really good season in Argentina, and then they kind of backed off and didn't. And then we took a chance when he had another decent year, but he's never been that consistent. And I don't know. I mean, I just think now he's 29 or something. From what I remember of his game, I'm kind of wondering if he's got the same speed or quickness that he had.
He has been in the Saudi league for 3.5 years now.
Yeah, which is earning good money, but I don't know that. I mean, I just keep thinking we didn't sign Cedric Bakambu when he was available on a free from coming back from China. And I think he would have been a much better fit. Now, I understand that he had higher wages than Vieto would probably ask for, but still, I mean, Bakambu has been still playing at the international level, ended up going to Marseille, I think, and doing okay. I'm just not that thrilled about Vieto. So I don't think it's going to happen, but it was just an odd one to cross the rumor mill.
Yeah, that's very odd. He's not even 30 yet. That's wild.
Yeah.
Given how long we've been hearing about him. But all right, I think we should wrap it up there, Alan. This has been wonderful. Thank you so much for hopping on the show. Always great to talk to you.
Yeah, great to talk to you too, Jeremy. It's always been good, and we can always fill up an hour in no time at all.
We really can. This has gone by in a flash. You can follow Alan's work at Villarreal USA, our sister site on SB Nation. You can read our work there at IntoTheCalderon.com. And follow our Patreon page, patreon.com/ColtGennaroChat. If you become a subscriber, you get some cool bonus goodies from as little as $3 a month. Until next time, adios.